This episode contains graphic or explicit content that may be disturbing, violent, or sexual in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
You're in the place where mysteries and the missing meet. Where conspiracies lurk around every corner. Welcome to the Deep Dark Truth.
Welcome back to the Deep Dark Truth. I'm Mo.
I'm Chip. And I'm Mikey.
And Mikey is allegedly not dead. Before we get started, I want to ask everyone, please take a minute to subscribe on whichever platform you're currently using. It greatly helps us and it's free.
It's so easy. It's probably just one button.
It is probably just one button.
It would surprise me if it were more than three buttons.
Today's episode takes place in Circleville, Ohio.
Oh no, Ohio. We got beef with Ohio.
Don't alienate the audience. We haven't even started.
To be fair, I don't have beef with Ohio. All of you have beef with Ohio, Michigan.
That's all alleged. Moving on. Today's episode takes place in Circleville, Ohio, a town 25 miles south of Columbus, with a population currently sitting at about 16,000. But in 1976, when this case took place, or started, the population was just over 11,000, according to population.us. Circleville was largely a manufacturing town, the kind that is weaponized in political elections, and in the summer of 1976, it was home to more scandal than it was political foothold. It was in fact the town's secrets, which caused a lot of upheaval with the residents of Circleville for decades, leading to blackmail, threats, and intrigue that you would expect from film noir and not small town living.
Oh, you've never lived in a small town.
Today, we are going to be talking about the Circleville letters. You will notice a lot of similarities in the Circleville letters compared to our episode on The Watcher.
I was going to ask, is it like that?
It's a lot like that.
Yay. It was so upsetting. I hate The Watcher one.
I love it.
I mean, I love
like,
it, but
in a bad way.
It.
Oh, yeah. I'm just intrigued by the whole thing. In small towns, everyone seems to know everybody else's business. But oftentimes, people are never confronted with that knowledge, with the fact that what they might think is a secret is not a very well-kept one, if at all. Enter the Circleville letters. In 1976, a bus driver named Mary Gillespie received a letter which had no return address and was postmarked as being sent from Columbus, nearly 30 miles away. The letter told Mary that the sender was aware that she was cheating on her husband Ronald with Gordon Massey, the superintendent of the schools that she worked for and her children attended.
Do I know this case?
You know what? You very well might have.
Is someone going to be threatened on the side of the road? Wait, no. Not murdered on the side of a road.
You are so close. The letter reads as such. Mrs. Gillespie, stay away from Massey. Don't lie when questioned about meeting him. I know where you live. I've been observing your house. And know you have children. This is no joke. Please take it serious. Everyone concerned has been notified, and everything will be over soon. Another letter reads, Lady, this is your last chance to report him. I know you are a pig and will prove it, and shame you out of Ohio. A pig sneaks around and meets other women's husbands behind their backs, causes family and homes and marriages to suffer.
But the first letter, I really liked that it said, please take this seriously. Like, hey, pay attention to me. You have my attention already. Please. Pretty please.
An excerpt from another letter. I shall come out there and put a bullet in the child's head.
What the fuck?
So we are obviously escalating.
Yeah.
Mary's husband, Ron, also starts to receive letters. When he confronts Mary, she denies the affair. Mr. Gillespie, your wife is seeing Gordon Massey. You should catch them together and kill them both. He doesn't deserve to live. Ron gets another letter 2 weeks after the first, quote, kill them both. I know where you live. You're pushing your luck, unquote. Ron and Mary, not knowing what to do at this point, begin to discuss the letters with a chosen few and decide that if given the opportunity, they would leave the raider to believe that they know who they are in an effort to scare them into stopping. All of this ultimately culminates into Ron receiving a phone call, and his reaction to this call led many to believe that something about the contents of this conversation tipped him off as to who the writer of the letters may be. Ron took his gun and presumably went to confront them. But Ron never made it. He was found deceased not far from his home after his truck collided with a tree. Curiously, a single shot had been fired from Ron's weapon. No explanation was given for the fired shot, nor do I believe that that actual round was ever found in anything surrounding the accident, and Ron's death was ruled to be the result of the accident. Theories began to circulate that Ron was run off the road and tried to shoot the other vehicle. The sheriff allegedly shared with some that there appeared to be foul play involved. That theory was walked back, and the sheriff's office revealed that Ron's blood alcohol level was higher than the legal limit, a shock, surprisingly, to those who knew him, as Ron didn't typically drink. Questions were then raised about the potential involvement of someone at the sheriff's office and whether or not there was potentially a cover-up.
Small town.
Sometime after Ron's death, the superintendent and Mary admit to the affair. I'm assuming because the investigation following Ron's accident, there were a lot of questions asked about this stalker, this letter writer, etc. But at that point, they claim that the affair actually didn't start until after the letters had already started. And if that is the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking at two of the very smartest people to ever exist.
What?
Because it says very clearly, take this seriously. There are threats of harm on the children. It's nonsensical that that would be true to me. I cannot prove that it's untrue, but it's nonsensical that it would be.
And like, what about this, you know, like, oh, we're here discussing the letters together, and now we realize we do like each other.
Like, the letters brought them together?
This is the next Lifetime movie.
We're not even going to entertain it. Moving on.
Oh, I'm entertained.
You're listening to the wrong show. We're going to circle back, but first, I want to acknowledge that many others received letters from the Circleville writer. In fact, a slew of articles mentioned that nearly everyone in town either received a letter or knew someone else who received the letter. But I haven't been able to get a hold of hard copies of those, either because they weren't saved or they were handed over to police who never released them. And that may have been purposeful to fit a narrative for what comes next.
Also, there was like 11,000 people. They did not all get letters. Half of them did not get letters, I guarantee it.
That's very true, but thousands of letters were sent.
Supposedly. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Also, the tones of all those letters, the ones you read the excerpts from, were so completely different, even from each other in their murder ways.
I think, too, it seems that it starts as a warning, and then when they are ignored, they get progressively angrier and angrier, and it really feels like the hatred is more towards the superintendent for some reason, at least to me, even though they go so far as to threaten the children and threaten the wife. It seems like the anger, the bulk of it, is how come this man is still the superintendent? How come you haven't went public with this? How come he still retains his position? There are some sources that say that even the superintendent's son received them, but I couldn't find direct quotes. So this will be the only mention of those other letters for now, because most articles, as you can guess, focus on Mary and Ron and their family. So let's get back to Mary. We're going to fast forward 6 years from Ron's death. It's 1983, and the letters are still coming.
This whole time. Wow.
In a new act of aggression, signs are put in place by the Circleville writer along Mary's bus route.
Allegedly. Who put them there? Copycats.
We'll get there in a minute. Uh-oh. But the handwriting, at this point in time at least, appears to have been the same handwriting.
Okay, and all of these have been by hand written letters?
They are all by hand. So at this point, Mary is done. Her children can potentially see this coming home from school, and she takes down one of the signs. That sign has a box attached to it, and when she opens that box, she discovers that the sign was booby-trapped with a gun.
Yikes.
If she would have just ripped down the sign a different way instead of the way that she took it out of the ground, it would have triggered and the gun would have went off.
Yikes.
An inspection by the police reveals that the serial number on that gun is registered to her former brother-in-law, Paul Freshour, who had been previously married to her husband's sister. He was also one of the very few, including Ron's sister, that were in on the Circleville letters when Mary and Ron first started receiving them.
So let me just get this straight. He's like two steps separated via marriage. Her husband has a sister, and that sister was married to Paul.
Correct.
Okay, just check.
When questioned, Paul denied any involvement with the letters, and he is asked to copy down statements read to him to the best of his ability after being shown the handwriting and being asked to replicate that handwriting.
This is such a bad test. What? I'm not going to...
This is not how handwriting analysis works. I just want to put that out there. So allegedly what happened is they gave him the letter and they asked him to copy the letter to the best of his ability, like looking at the letter. Then they took away the other letter with the handwriting and then said, okay, now I'm going to read you this and I want you to write it. So he's writing down using the handwriting that he just replicated to the best of his ability on a new sheet of paper without looking at the handwriting. Does that make sense?
No, because why would anyone ever...
I don't think... Okay, redact. I take it back.
No, I want to know who these cops were who were like, this is how we analyze handwriting. We're going to have him try and copy a thing to prove that he is someone who's threatening and trying to murder someone. I'm definitely going to try my best to replicate that handwriting.
Have you heard? I will get to it. So, he then took the sheriff to his house and he showed him where the gun was kept and said that it had not been used in a long time. Of course, it was not there and was missing. There were many rumors by people close to Paul that he actually knew for a while that the gun was missing, but he suspected that his son had taken it for some reason. Him and his wife had been divorced. His son was living with Ron's sister, so he didn't want him to get in any trouble. So he kept mum about the whole thing. But then when taken back with the sheriff, Paul was informed he was under arrest for attempted murder. And Paul claimed that until he was arrested, he had no idea of the booby trap sign or the attempted murder at all. He was just told by the police that they were looking into the Circleville writer. So allegedly, he just thought that he was being tested to see if he was the writer, not tested to see if he was an attempted murderer. Despite Paul having an alibi, he was found guilty, and he spent the next 10 years in prison. But at no point during that 10 years did the letter stop. In fact, he was placed in solitary confinement, and two different internal investigations happened by the warden. That warden then wrote a letter to Paul's wife, Clarity. This is a different wife. He divorced Ron's sister. They had went through a divorce. He then got remarried. The warden told Paul's wife that there was no way Paul could possibly be writing the letters because he had no access to any mail. He was placed in solitary. And the letters, like all of the other previous letters, were postmarked from Columbus, no return address, etc.
Yeah. And I mean, people can get things out of prison, but, you know, that's a lot of roadblocks to get through.
In an interesting twist of events, even Paul was sent a letter. Before we read that letter, let's take a moment to hear from our friends Christy and Amber at Old Timey Crimey Podcast.
I didn't know you could have a cliffhanger mid-episode, but apparently this is a thing we're doing now, audience.
Hey, it's Old Timey Crimey. Do you like true crime?
Do you like history?
Do you think murder's just better in black and white?
Come join us on Old Timey Crimey, where every week we sit down and talk about a crime that history forgot.
Or maybe a crime that history can't get enough of.
From the classics like Jack the Ripper and Lizzie Borden,
to the crimes you may have never heard of, like the Tottenham Outrage, or the criminal lives of popes. We dig deep into the archives to give you the details you won't get anywhere else.
Because the good old days
weren't always so good.
Find Old Timey Crimey wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So let's get back to the letter that Paul received while he was in prison. Fresh Hour. Now, when are you going to believe you aren't getting out of there? I told you 2 years ago, when we set them up, they stay set up. Don't you listen at all? No one wants you out. No one. The joke is on you. Ha ha. It literally says ha ha. You can't make this up. Tell no one of this letter. I saw the paper. Great news. Great. The sheriff loved it. Ha ha. Do you believe it now? Do you?
I have some comments and editing suggestions for the writer. I'm so annoyed that you couldn't find more letters from everyone else in this town.
And the thing is, there are a few that are, like, completely out of place, and I have no idea who they were to.
Right. It's probably that everyone just started writing letters to the people they hated because now there's a cover. Guessing most of them didn't set up guns in boxes with signs. It's just such a big leap to go from, hey, stop having an affair, to I'm gonna shoot your children in the head. I get that people who doing the murder do not have the same emotional range as me, but also I have a lot of rage and this is not the jump I make.
Paul maintained his innocence until his death in 2012, and he also maintained a WordPress with PDFs of court documents and things said in his own words as he was trying to get the FBI to look into the Circleville letters, whether for vindication.
No, it was that. It was for release me and vindication. That's...
He said that he never blamed the jury, as many things were thrown out of court and an eyewitness was even never followed up on. That witness was another female bus driver in the district who was passing along the same route as Mary just a half an hour or so before. This bus driver claimed to see a yellow El Camino where the sign ended up being, and she described him as being a large man with light or sandy-colored hair, but no one ever followed up on this lead.
What?
Yeah. So, allegedly, Paul's ex-wife, Karen, had another brother who had an El Camino, and she was also allegedly dating a man that was large with sandy hair. Again, this is all just rumors that I've seen repeated on the internet, but either way, this El Camino was never looked into. Whether that's true or not, we don't know.
Sheriff's in on it, or someone in the cops is on it. How do you not follow up with this? This is such an easy, obviously, that you at least have to follow up to discredit.
Well, interestingly enough, Unsolved Mysteries covered the Circleville letters in the mid-90s, and after the episode aired, they received a letter.
That's not that interesting. Of course they're going to. I sent them a letter. I did not.
Forget Circleville, Ohio. Do nothing to hurt Sheriff Radcliffe. If you come to Ohio, you El Sickos will pay. The Circleville writer.
Okay. I mean, I don't think I should give any of these people credit, but this feels like a double bluff. I'm going to paint a target on the sheriff's back.
To the untrained eye, the handwriting between that letter and the letter that Fresh Hour gets in prison look to be the same, but they are smaller letters and not quite as nice looking as the first letter.
He took his time writing to Fresh Hour, just, you know, really rubbing it in. Ha ha.
So even after all of this time, experts are at odds with who the writer might be. One expert, Beverly East, who was featured in 48 Hours coverage, believes that it was, in fact, Paul Freshour. Another, Mary O'Toole, thought it was more likely to be a woman with not much in the way of education due to the different sentence constructions. At this point, I will note that Paul had a master's degree.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh,
that, I mean, obviously you can just write in slang, but if you're just writing naturally.
And if you don't want people to know who you are, you might purposefully make mistakes that you otherwise wouldn't. Like, if you never use an Oxford comma and you just decide, I'm just going to always use an Oxford comma when I'm writing like this. Because that's the sign of a serial killer.
Mo has not thought about this before.
It's fine. Mary O'Toole also pointed out the hundreds of letters that were written while Paul was in prison, which don't really have an explanation for them. And Beverly East, the one featured in the 48 Hours coverage that believes it's Paul Freshour, she didn't really have an answer. And one of the letters that she examined was written while he was in prison. And she says that she would swear on absolutely anything that all of the letters were, in fact, written by the exact same person.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
The moment anyone knows about them, copycat.
Which is another theory. There are theories that there are up to three writers of the Circleville letters. And Martin Yant, who is the founder and lead private investigator at Ace Investigations, a detective agency. He had an award-winning career as a journalist prior to that. He believes that he knows who the writer of the Circleville letters was, and it was no one that we've even mentioned in this episode. Man named David Longberry was a co-worker of Mary's, a fellow bus driver, who was later arrested for raping an 11-year-old girl.
Jesus Christ.
And at some point, Mary had turned him down after he flirted with her, had kind of spurned his advances. And Martin believes that that was the fuel that ignited this original fire.
But the first letter doesn't have enough rage for that. All the other letters have enough rage for that, but not that first one.
See, but the first letter is kind of like getting her to stay away from him. Stay away from Massey. Don't lie when questioned about meeting him. I know where you live. I've been observing your house and know that you have children. This is no joke. Please take it serious. Everyone concerned has been notified and everything will be over soon. So it almost seems like it feels a little bit more like, I know that he's doing this to you, or that he somehow roped you in. Everything's going to be over soon. Like, I'm letting everybody know about this. And then once she continues to see him, allegedly, once she continues to see him and doesn't inform her husband, it then becomes, takes on kind of a darker turn. If indeed that is the person that wrote the letters. But I can understand how it can go from, oh, she needs to be just rescued away from him, to, like, that bitch. Like, this is, it's the same thing that happens when men ask women to date or make a pass at a woman. And even if you're married and you say, yeah, sorry, I'm married, it takes a really dark turn. And it's happened to me literally dozens of times.
You're not even hot. I don't even want to sleep with you. You slut them.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like, oh, like, you're not even cute anyway, blah, blah, blah. Like, really? Because
I have evidence that you don't think that.
2 seconds ago, you were trying to date me. 100% that's what was happening.
The previous sentence.
Yeah, and those weren't even met with derision. Those were just, I'm married, no thanks. Imagine if that advance was a little bit more forward and the negative reaction to it was a little bit more forward too, of no, I would never, or like absolutely not, or anything more personal. You just don't know.
It's just that the first one's so gentle. You know, it's obviously still threatening. But it's like, please take this seriously. It will all be over soon. Don't see him again.
Yeah, it feels more threatening to the superintendent's career, right? It's threatening, but in a way that
I'm not concerned for my life. I am, because, you know, I'm getting a threatening letter, but
And this person isn't even threatening to out her to her husband at this point. It isn't for a couple weeks of her getting multiple letters that they then write her husband a letter. So I think if at that point she would have broken it off with the superintendent, came clean, and wasn't seen with the superintendent again, because we should assume there's context clues that they've been watching the house, that they know the cars that they drive, that they know everything that is going on and are being actively watched. We can assume that if she would have not seen him again, that it wouldn't have continued to escalate.
I just don't know how you don't even take a break from your affair after the gentle letter. Like, hey, let's cool our jets.
Can you imagine not being absolutely mortified? Oh my god, like, I need to, like, get in front of this and just come clean myself. Like, what a horrible way for my husband to find this out.
Yeah.
I just truly don't understand.
It's also just letting them hold the thread over you is come clean. So that the letter writer doesn't have any power. Like, okay, fine, I'm gonna get in deep shit with my husband.
Exactly, you can't blackmail me if there's nothing to blackmail me about.
Yeah, exactly. When the threats start having shooting children involved, that's a different story. But that first letter, and who knows about the letters afterwards, directly afterwards, but I'm still suspicious of the sheriff.
I, too, am pretty suspicious, mostly because I just want to know where the bullet went and whether or not he did, in fact, fire at someone because he thought they were following him, because they tried to run him off the road, because of this, that, and the other thing. I want to know more about the blood alcohol level, how those tests were confirmed, because it seems like they weren't immediate enough. Like, they weren't tested immediate enough for the sheriff to not then pass on that it looked suspicious and that it looked like it could be as a result of foul play. The thing is that it very well might not have been. But I still don't know how to explain that bullet and where it went unless he's just driving down the road, like, shooting at trees. Why?
But yeah, if you see a couple bullets around that are just fired wildly, you know, look at this divot in the grass 10 feet down the road before he crashed.
Yeah, and it doesn't appear from absolutely anything that I've read. Mind you, this happened in 1976, and of the, you know, 15 or so articles I've read, they were all written in the age of the internet, right? Very few photocopies of actual newspaper stories from the time. A few, but not very many, and none of them mention the police finding absolutely anything, you know, down the road or by this tree or anything that suggests that they know what happened to the bullet that was fired.
This gun has definitely fired a shot recently. Where? These handwritings are all completely different.
You can see the first one is very different from the rest of them. Like, they're very blocky, the other letters, but the very first letters, they're a mix of blocky letters and regular letters.
Yeah. These are, I sat here and wrote out letter versus, like, I'm here writing a letter as a normal human being.
Some other little excerpts from various letters from around the internet. You are also a pig. Inform the school board on CBS's posters, signs, billboards, only pigs ride motorcycles. There were many booby traps at the schools, but no one could admit it for public scare. They can now. The signs and letters will not stop. Mary was not a teacher, only a bus driver. Radcliffe does not allow media unless approved by him. There was signs in the Grove City restaurants. So this appears to be a letter that is to a newspaper where he's correcting their inaccuracies. Mary wasn't a teacher. She was a bus driver, first of all.
I have some comments on your newspaper.
So all of the letters, it seems like, used to be available on a website called CircleVilleOnline.com, but that site is no longer available. And so lots of them were picked and recirculated from that website. And so when you go back to try and find a better, clearer version, and you try and go to that website, it does not work, which is very unfortunate. When I first started looking into this case, I had a site that did pretty much all of the letters, or at least wrote out what the letters said. And that site is now a 404 error code and is gone,
shit.
Which is very unfortunate. And that's what happens when you wait 2.5 years to do an episode.
Oops.
It's in the case doc. We have a doc of hundreds of cases, ones that are sent to us on the survey every year that get kind of prioritized, of ones that are sent into us by families or tips. And this was one of them.
If you would like a case covered and have it on that list in that giant document, email us at thedeepdarktruthpodcast@gmail.com or send us a tip at the tip line, something, 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 3411.
313-355-3411. And if you haven't listened to our episode on the St. Aubyn Street Massacre, we recommend it. Go on back and listen to it. So thoughts, opinions, share them with us, text them to the tip line, email us, and let us know what you think. Who was the Circleville writer? Until next time, I'm Mo.
And I'm Chip. And I'm Mikey. Mo is beating her head against the microphone.
You just listened to the Deep Dark Truth Podcast. See you next time. And remember, your local cryptids want to meet you.